You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In recent days, I have played and replayed this video of gymnast Simone Biles executing this mind-blowing triple-twisting double somersault thing during this floor exercise at the U.S. National Championships over the weekend. She totally nailed it, and it's one for the record books. But ahead of the competition last week, the four-time world champion and Olympic gold medalist apologized for the tears in her eyes.
It's hard coming here for an organization and having had them fail us so many times. And we had won gold. We've done everything that they asked us for, even when we didn't want to. And they couldn't do one damn job. You had one job. You literally had one job, and you couldn't protect us.
Biles is referring to the sexual abuse that she and hundreds of other gymnasts suffered by former team doctor Larry Nassar. This hour, we're discussing childhood sexual abuse, and this content is difficult, it's sensitive, so please use your discretion because it may not be suitable for everyone. Did you follow the Larry Nassar trial? What were your thoughts? Did you listen to the women's testimonies? What feelings did they bring up for you? Join in at any point this hour, 800-642-1234. Abigail Pesta is a journalist and author. Her new book is called The Girls, An All-American Town, A Predatory Doctor, and the Untold Story of the Gymnast Who Brought Him Down. She joins us from WHYY Studios in Philadelphia. Abby, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So we know that about 500 women have come forward against Larry Nassar so far. You talked to 25 survivors about this abuse that they had experienced as children and young women, sometimes telling their stories for the first time to you. To know you were being trusted with these extremely personal stories, what was it like?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you so much for letting people know about these stories, because these women, yes, many are telling them for the first time, and, you know, some of them haven't told their own families about some of these things, and they did so in the hopes of helping people recognize the signs of a predator and to help other families and other girls in the future, and they really poured their hearts out, and so, you know, these stories need to be heard, and I so appreciate your helping get them out there. But it was an incredibly moving experience meeting these women. Yes, I interviewed 25 survivors from the very first to the very last. And, you know, the very first is in her mid-40s and the last is in her mid-teens. So that shows the, you know, the scope of this travesty. It was almost 30 years that this doctor got away with abusing girls. And that's, you know, that's what these women in this book help explain, is how he evolved over the years, because these women, most of them grew up with Nassar. They knew him since they were toddlers in Lansing, Michigan. And, you know, he befriended them. He befriended their families, their parents. He just evolved into a master predator. And they show over the decades how he did it.
Let's talk about one of the survivors in your book, Sarah Taristi, and had amazing talent as a gymnast when she was a kid. And she is Larry Nassar's first known target. He started abusing her when she was 14. What do we know about her story?
Sarah, she has such courage in telling the story. She's telling it for the first time. She is most likely his very first target. And she met him back in 1988 when he first set foot in this gym in Michigan where he started testing on her. You know, pushing boundaries, testing limits. She was trying to recuperate from a broken sternum. And she was also very vulnerable because, like many gymnasts, she had been through this brutal training boot camp. There was a coach, John Gettert, that she and many of the gymnasts in this book talk about. And they say he created just an absolutely, you know, terribly damaging environment, physically, mentally abusive, verbally abusive environment. And Sarah and a lot of the women told me that he made them feel like injuries were their fault. So because if you were injured, that meant you weren't concentrating and it was your fault. So she felt like this injury was her fault. Her self-esteem had been completely trampled. And so she was really just the perfect target for a predator because she was vulnerable. She had lost her sense of self at this point, and she was injured. So Nasser, you know, she describes how he began icing her chest and, you know, gradually pushing the boundaries until he was touching her nipples. And she says the coach witnessed this, and this is tremendous. It's just unbelievable. The coach witnessed this and did nothing, and in fact made fun of her. He made fun of her body. He mocked her breasts. He said he made fun of a lump on her chest from where her ribs had reconnected badly, and he called it her third boob. And then he began calling her third boob. So she really unveils this environment, you know, that she and so many girls grew up in, where the coach and the doctor just trampled these girls. And, you know, over the years, this coach and doctor, they worked together for nearly 30 years, and he rose to become Olympic coach alongside Nasser as Olympic doctor. But Sarah really shows how it all began and how this environment helped create Larry Nasser, because these girls were, you know, they were feeling just so, you know, trampled that they would then go to him for help. And she also unveils that the abuse went much further than people realize, and that he raped her in his apartment. And I spoke to two other women who said he brought them to his apartment in those early years as well. And he would do so, you know, promising medical treatment or saying that he was doing medical research. So he, you know, abused girls in many terrible ways in many places. And it all started there. And Sarah just provides, you know, groundbreaking insight into how he began.
We're talking with Abigail Pesta, the author of The Girls, an All-American Town, a Predatory Doctor, and the Untold Story of the Gymnast Who Brought Him Down. Did you follow the Larry Nasser trial? What are your thoughts here? Did you listen to the testimonies? What feelings did they bring up for you? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Now, John Gettert was suspended by USA Gymnastics in January 2018 over these allegations of physical abuse. Abby, a few hours later, he announced his retirement. Is he part of any criminal investigation here?
He is under investigation now by the Michigan Attorney General, and that's ongoing. It's the investigation began with police in Michigan, and then the Attorney General took it over last year. It's been going on for more than a year and a half, and, you know, a lot of the survivors have told me they really want to see him held accountable, because they said that for years he created an abusive environment that helped enable the abuse. And of course, the first survivor says he witnessed the abuse, and he himself was physically abusive. And, you know, women told me just insane stories of what went on in that gym. Izzy Hutchins was a gymnast who told me she trained and competed with a broken leg and a broken elbow. And she had told Nasser, she had told him about this pain she was having, and he just wrapped her up and said she was fine. And of course, she knew she'd get in trouble with the coach for being injured, so she didn't want to talk to the coach about the injuries. But here her doctor was telling her she was just fine. And so she was training and competing with broken bones. And finally, at a practice, she couldn't do a floor routine. She couldn't do the flips. And she said John Gettert punished her. He made her do the floor routine, substituting somersaults for flips. So he embarrassed her, and he had the girls gather around. And her sister was there, her younger sister. And she told me, you know, it was mortifying to watch her older sister be humiliated like this. And so there's Izzy crying, doing the floor routine with somersaults instead of flips, you know. So that's the kind of environment these girls were dealing with.
Talking with Abby Pesta, her book is called The Girls. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about the hundreds of survivors who brought down Larry Nasser. This hour is difficult. It's a sensitive conversation. Nasser was the USA Gymnastics team doctor who was sentenced to 60 years in federal prison for child pornography convictions. And then later last year, he was sentenced to 40 to 175 years more for his battery of sex crimes. At age 13, Jade Capua was desperate to find a doctor who could help her return to the sport she loved. And after a hip surgery, she went to Nasser. Her testimony.
All I can think of is how this man, someone who held oh so many high credentials, was the monster who left me with more pain and scars than I came to his office with.
And she ends her 8 minutes with the words, "I'm a survivor." Your thoughts here. Join the conversation, 800-642-1234. Abby Pesta is the author of the new book, The Girls, and she stays with us. Let's take a call now. Alyssa joining us from Burlington. Good morning, Alyssa.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that as a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, that I think it's so important to expose how abusers work, because I think there's a lot of people who still have this idea of the abuser as like the scary man in the car with the candy. But predators love positions of power and positions of trust, and that's where my abuser was. He was a police officer. So, you know, it's just so important to remember that it's not just the scary stranger in the car. It's people that we can trust.
Alyssa, thanks. And these gymnasts, they trusted Larry Nasser, Abby.
Yes, that is so true, and that is such a good point, because I think you're right. A lot of people don't understand. They think, oh, I can spot a predator a mile away. You know, you watch Law and Order, and you hear the creepy music, and there's the predator. But, right, they are most often people you know, people you trust, you know, a friend, a family member, a person in a position of authority. And that's where Nasser really was able to manipulate kids and families, because he was a doctor, and everyone is taught to trust the doctor. And he, you know, he was manipulating kids. So he told them he was treating them medically, and they believed him. He was the doctor. So a lot of them did not understand that they were being abused. And some did, and some did report him over the decades. And I think a lot of people don't realize this, that a number of young women and girls reported him to coaches, therapists, to the police, starting back in the 90s, and they were just dismissed and disbelieved. But the point that he was a trusted doctor is a really important one, because he was able to use that. And as he rose to Olympic doctor, he was able to use that, because then he was the Olympic doctor, and he immediately had people's trust, because he, you know, was in this position of power, and he had the backing of major institutions like the Olympic Committee, USA Gymnastics, which is the governing body for the sport, and Michigan State University, where he also worked. So he had all this power behind him, all this authority, and he was able to use that to gain people's trust. But he was also a master manipulator. He brought gifts to the kids from the Olympics to make them feel special. You know, the women in this book, they grew up with him. They knew him since, like I said, since they were toddlers. So he, you know, ensnared them from an early age and made them feel like, wow, this Olympic doctor, you know, thinks I'm special. And these were girls who wanted a college scholarship. You know, they weren't necessarily aiming for the Olympics.
They were trying to pay back the cost their parents had put forth to have them trained to be a gymnast.
Right. So he really, you know, in many ways became a master manipulator. He, you know, he would not bill the family's health insurers because he told them he saw such potential in their girls. And the families would think, that's amazing. The Olympic doctor sees such potential in my child that he's not going to bill my health insurer. And then looking back, they realized, oh, he did that because there were no medical records, you know. So, and he texted with the girls. He Facebooked, Instagrammed with them. He just had so many ways of ensnaring these families.
Let's go to Madeline now in De Pere. Hi, Madeline.
Hello. I really feel like the dogs and the cats are more protected than the kids. It's like all the people in position of authority have failed the children. I don't care if it's the Catholic Church, the Boy Scouts, Southern Baptist Convention, medical prevention, the law enforcement, that documentation has been sent to Governor Evers and to the Attorney General's office about failure of mandatory reporting. Nothing happened. Nothing.
Madeline, thanks for the call. And it seems, as Madeline is saying, that this inability to protect is pervasive in our society. Abby, any thoughts there?
Yes, it's a really good point. These girls were failed in so many ways by so many people. You know, starting back in the 90s, a teenage girl reported Nassar's abuse to the coach at Michigan State University. And this young woman, her name was Larissa Boyce, told the coach what the doctor was doing and just outright got gaslighted. The coach didn't tell her parents, didn't tell the authorities, instead told Nassar. And so then Larissa got in trouble from Nassar for, you know, thinking that he was abusing her. And she was a kid. She felt like, oh my gosh, I must have a dirty mind that I thought he was doing something wrong. And she told, you know, she told me how she got back up on his table to prove she didn't have a dirty mind and that she trusted him. And she said he abused her, you know, worse that day than any other. And that's the kind, you know, then a few years later, another teenage girl with her mother, they go to the police and report Nassar. And the police just believed the doctor. Case closed. They didn't interview any outside sources. They didn't check with any other medical experts to see if this, you know, supposed treatment was legitimate. You know, and this is decades ago. And it went on over the decades. And just story after story of girls coming forward and being dismissed and disbelieved. So, you know, that's why the stories in this book are so important, because it shows how over time this happened, and it shows how we can stop it. And, you know, it's just a really important point that, you know, the women who raised their voice in this book and in this case, they're helping to empower other women and girls, other survivors, to speak up and to be heard. And these girls were not heard over decades, and that's what they're trying to change.
We're talking with Abby Pesta, and her new book is called The Girls. It's a book about the Larry Nassar sexual abuse case. Are you involved in gymnastics, or did you grow up doing the sport? Do you think the sport does enough to protect children from abusive behavior? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Anne now in Green Bay. Hi, Anne. Oh, Anne, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Anne. Go ahead.
I just can't believe there were that many parents bamboozled by this man. I mean, he's got a girl out there doing routines with broken bones in her body, and the parents can't figure this out. I think there was a real problem with some of these parents, personally.
Anne brings up this point that parents were seeing their child, you know, competing with broken parts of their body, and they were also in the same room at some point with their child during these exams, Abby.
Yeah, you know, here's something else that I think the book really helps people understand, is that the parents were preyed on too, that Nassar preyed on entire families. And what I also learned is that I always thought, oh, it must be the parents pushing these kids. When I spoke to these women, I learned that actually the kids wanted it. They all said that. You know, the girls, they were the ones who really wanted to keep going and power through it. And, you know, their parents didn't necessarily, you know, they didn't want to end their dreams. And some of their parents were encouraging them to quit. Like, you know, the girl who competed with the broken bones, her father desperately wanted her to quit. She didn't want to. And in fact, that family was torn apart by this, because Nassar played the two parents against each other. He would tell the father, yes, Izzy should do something different. This is, you know, not good for her. And then he would tell the mother, oh, no, Izzy's doing great. She'll be fine. So he, you know, he actually helped split that family apart. They divorced. They all spoke to me, the mother, the father, Izzy and her sister. Both girls were abused. And they really helped show how they, you know, how Nassar preyed on the parents as well as the kids, and, you know, just played them against each other to get what he wanted. So, you know, the parents in this case they're devastated, because yes, some of them were in the same room while Nassar abused their child, and they didn't realize, because Nassar figured out that that the girl wouldn't say anything because she's a kid. You know, she's a kid who doesn't understand what's happening. It's uncomfortable. It's embarrassing. And of course, the kid thinks it's a medical treatment. So he figured out she's not going to say anything. And the fact that the parent, and he would block the parent's view, you know, so the parent couldn't see what was going on. And he knew, too, that with a parent in the room, the child would think, well, then it must be okay. So many women told me this, that, and it was heartbreaking, that because their mom or their dad was in the room, they thought, well, they must know and it must be okay. So the parents were really preyed upon here, too. And of course, you know, here's a doctor, like I said, with Olympic credentials, with the backing of these major institutions. It's not, you don't think he's a predator.
Talking with Abby Pesta, her new book is called The Girls. We're talking about USA Gymnastics and the hundreds of female gymnasts who have brought down Team Dr. Larry Nassar for decades of sexual abuse. Do you think elite sports are a safe place for children and young people? And if not, what do you think should be done to help protect athletes from this type of abuse? What do you think the future holds for gymnastics? 800-642-1234. Stay with us. We'll continue this conversation after a news update here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're having this difficult and sensitive conversation this hour. If you're just joining us, please use your discretion as we talk about the USA Gymnastics sex abuse scandal and the hundreds of gymnasts who brought down the former team doctor Larry Nassar, who will spend the rest of his life behind bars. We're talking about the survivors, many who testified last year, including two-time Olympian Allie Raceman. She took the stand. She stood feet from her abuser, and she spoke her truth.
Larry, you do realize now that we, this group of women you so heartlessly abused over such a long period of time, are now a force, and you are nothing.
Be part of this conversation at 800-642-1234. Abby Pesta stays with us. Her book is called The Girls, an All-American Town, a Predatory Doctor, and the Untold Story of the Gymnasts Who Brought Him Down, and she stays with us. Abby, as we look at the coaches over the decades, how are Bella and Marta Crowley connected to Larry Nassar? Because the Crowleys have this ranch in Texas for gymnasts. And for any gymnast who has an eye on a spot on the USA Olympic team, all roads go to the Crowley Ranch.
Yes, some of the gymnasts spoke with me about this. One was Tasha Schweikert. She was she's an Olympic bronze medalist, and she and her sister Jordan, they both went to the Crowley Ranch. Jordan was a national team member, and they described the same kind of environment that the women in Michigan described under Coach Gettert. The Crowleys, they said, just ran a brutal boot camp. Again, it was a place where you couldn't say you were injured because you'd get in trouble. You know, Jordan said she was injured, and she made the mistake of saying it, and she got banished to a back room for the day, a back gym. The athletes felt like they had to push through injuries. They couldn't talk about them. Again, you know, they just described a physically, psychologically abusive environment. And also there were, some of these girls at the gym in Michigan were going to the Crowley Ranch because as they were rising through the ranks, one was young Autumn Blaney. You know, she described going out to the ranch, and you know, at that point she was, 12, 13 years old. She was a kid, and she goes out there, and parents were not allowed at the ranch. So, and her mom went with her everywhere, and her mom was watching. And her mom went with her to Texas to the ranch, but she had to stay at a hotel nearby. You know, she couldn't go to the ranch, and she would describe calling her daughter every night, and they would talk on the phone, and she would be on the phone as Autumn went to sleep. Another woman, Jessica Howard, she was a three-time national champion gymnast. She was sent to the ranch specifically because Larry Nassar also treated girls at the ranch because, you know, not only was he volunteering at the gym in Michigan, but he was treating the national team gymnasts, Olympic gymnasts. He was working at Michigan State where he was the gymnastics team doctor, in addition to working at a Michigan State clinic where he got his hands on people from across the community. But Nassar would go to the Crowley Ranch, and Jessica told me she was sent there specifically to see Nassar for a week, and he abused her all during that week, and she said she was completely on her own. There was no one there watching out for her. There was no one, you know, paying attention to her whatsoever because she wasn't there to train. She was there specifically to see Nassar that week. And she said on her last night there, Nasser came to her dorm room where she was staying with other girls, a little cabin, and was knocking on the door saying it was time for her appointment. And she said, you know, she had been taught as a gymnast to always obey authority, to always do what she was told. And that night she just couldn't do it. She just wouldn't go. And he came into the room and tried to get her to come out to go to her last appointment. And she wouldn't. And she said she just had, she wasn't sure if it was abuse or not. Again, she was a kid, and she had grown up in this environment. This is another important point. These girls grew up in this environment where they don't know about sex abuse. They don't know about sex. They're not dating. There's no time for that. They're only training. They don't know, you know, they were just very isolated. But yeah, so the Carolis, the ranch, you know, again, you know, it was an environment that was so abusive that it, you know, enabled the sexual abuse, because again, so many of these women said that they went to Larry Nasser as their friend, their confidant, you know, the person who they could confide in about the difficult training. And again, they said that, you know, they were set up by that abusive training environment for the sexual abuse of the doctor.
Do gymnasts still train at the Crowley Ranch? What is the state of it now?
No, the Crowley Ranch has been closed down.
Let's take another call now. Let's go to Emily in Sheboygan County. Hi, Emily.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Wow, just so much to unpack with this conversation. I originally was calling because of another caller, a comment that she had left that, you know, all these people and why didn't they do anything? And, you know, there's been letters written and things like that. And just the manipulation of this situation is just completely horrific to me. But I have a situation where I come from a custody battle with children, young children. And I feel like from that experience, what I have discovered is that people don't want to say anything. Teachers don't want to say anything. Social workers don't want to say anything. Therapists don't want to say anything. They will say all sorts of things to you in confidence, but no one will put that, you know, down in writing, and no one will appear in court and say these things. And there's such a pervasive aura about this entire thing, this entire sexual assault, sexual abuse, abuse in general, children in general. And to me, it seems like the rights of abusers and the rights of parents basically overshadow or eclipse whatever the children want.
Emily.
You know, you have lawyers and advocates, but they have no training in child behavior. They have no training in child development. They have no training in any of that. And they're the ones who are, quote unquote, representing their best interests in court.
Emily, thanks for the call. Abby, they don't have the training to know how and when to intervene?
Well, in the Nasser case, there were so many factors. Sometimes, you know, when a young woman would report the abuse, you know, like there was the Michigan Attorney General did an investigation of Michigan State and what went wrong, and they found that more than a dozen young women had reported Nasser over the years, and nothing had happened. And at one point, it was an outright cover-up by MSU. It was in 2014 when Amanda Thomashaw went and reported Nasser, and again, she was gaslighted, and the university got busted later because they issued two separate reports, one to her saying that they had concluded that Nasser had not violated the school's sexual abuse policy. And then they issued an internal report saying, yikes, this raises major red flags. You know, there could be major legal problems here. So, you know, that was a cover-up, and there's no question about it. But what the report from the Michigan Attorney General found is that over the decades, as these young women reported Nasser to coaches and trainers and others at the university, that for, you know, it's hard to understand, but they, you know, the report found that they weren't necessarily trying to do something sinister or cover up for Nasser, but they weren't listening and they weren't taking the girl seriously, or they just thought Nasser, well, he was the Olympic doctor, so the girl must have misunderstood, you know. So it's such an important, powerful lesson from this book, from these women's stories, to listen to what kids are saying, you know. There's a young woman in the book, Lindsay Schuett. She was a teenager who knew that Nasser abused her the first time it happened, and she had just seen the movie The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, which involved an abusive doctor, and she knew, and she told her school counselor, and the counselor told her to talk to her mom. The family had just moved to the Lansing community. Everyone was busy. Lindsay was a kid. She did tell her mom she didn't want to go back to the doctor. She was worried she'd get sent back. She did get sent back, and she talked about how she knew if he touched her, she would scream, and she described screaming on the table and to make him stop, and he did stop, and she said she screamed down the hall. And again, you know, it's like, oh God, you know, listen to kids. It's such a powerful message.
Abby Pesta is the author of The Girls. It's a book about the Larry Nassar sexual abuse case. Abby, there's a new report out that says the FBI knew about the abuse and was sitting back idle on this, that the FBI knew of the Nassar allegations and led to the abuse of, quote, dozens of additional amateur athletes, according to the report. What do we know about how federal authorities responded to USA Gymnastics?
Yes, this is appalling. So in 2015, a coach overheard a gymnast telling another gymnast about the abuse or talking about what Nassar did at the Curly Ranch. And so the coach went to USA Gymnastics, the governing body for the sport, and reported what she had heard. And, you know, that's where just complete inaction happened. USA Gymnastics waited weeks to tell the FBI. It did suspend Nassar, but it didn't tell the gymnasts and their families why. You know, in fact, you know, they made up a story that, oh, well, he needs to spend more time at his clinic or whatever, needs to spend more time with his family. You know, they suspended him. They didn't tell why. They allowed him to, and they didn't tell Michigan State, where he also worked. So they allowed him to continue abusing girls. And I spoke to some of those girls who were abused during that time. You know, their families are just outraged. So USA Gymnastics failed. The Olympic Committee failed. The FBI failed. No one did anything for more than a year. And the reason finally something happened was the Indianapolis Star newspaper ran an expose about abuse in gymnastics. They ran an expose about abusive coaches. And then
in 2016.
In the fall of 2016. And that's when, you know, gymnasts contacted the paper, and the paper ran a report about Nassar and blew the whole thing open.
Talking with Abby Pesta, her book is called The Girls. Still time for your questions, your comments, 800-642-1234. We'll continue in a moment on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the athletes who bravely confronted their abuser in the eye and unraveled this travesty that we know as the USA Gymnastics sex abuse scandal. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're looking at how the disgraced team doctor, Larry Nassar, could sexually abuse girls for decades and get away with it. This is a difficult and sensitive conversation we've been having, so please use care. And we reached out to USA Gymnastics in Wisconsin multiple times to invite them to be part of this hour, but they were unable to join us. They did not provide a statement. Abigail Pesta stays with us. Her new book is The Girls, and she traveled the country to interview 25 survivors and parents, legal experts, others. More than 200 survivors read victim impact statements at Larry Nassar sentencing last year. Still time for you at 800-642-1234. Abby, let's talk about the institutions that enabled Larry Nassar's abuse to continue for many years and the changes you see coming forward. But first, let's hear some of Olympic gymnast Allie Raceman's testimony against Nassar.
Now is the time to acknowledge that the very person who sits here before us now, who perpetrated the worst epidemic of sexual abuse in the history of sports, who is going to be locked up for a long, long time. This monster was also the architect of policies and procedures that are supposed to protect athletes from sexual abuse for both USA Gymnastics and the USOC.
Okay, so how is USA Gymnastics, the U.S. Olympic Committee, and Michigan State going forward here? What are the changes you're seeing?
Well, dozens of officials have been fired or charged with crimes, and Congress just last week proposed a law that would give Congress oversight over the Olympic Committee. And I know the gymnasts, you know, think that's a major step, giving Congress oversight of this committee. And the Olympic Committee has oversight of USA Gymnastics, the governing body for the sport. So it would also give Congress oversight over, you know, that group, that institution as well. So because the Olympic Committee, in fact, you know, moved to decertify USA Gymnastics as the governing body for the sport, but the Olympic Committee itself failed. So, you know, so that law, so I know the gymnasts feel that that law is progress, and but also they feel like there's people absolutely still need to be held accountable. For instance, the coach I mentioned, John Gettert, the gymnasts want to see him held accountable. You know, one woman in the book told me for the first time another layer to this travesty that, you know, like I said, many gymnasts reported that he created an abusive training environment, and that he, and the one said he witnessed the abuse, but she said he started grooming her when she was 16 years old, that he began grooming her for a sexual relationship, and when she was 18, he initiated a sexual relationship with her, and it left her, in the end, devastated. She trusted him. She had been taught to trust and obey her coach, and she thought he loved her, and he discarded her, and she felt suicidal, and it affected her entire life. And, you know, he went on to become Olympic coach. And what he did with that relationship, even though she was of legal age, there's an athlete coach relationship, and he was no longer coaching her at that point. But the Safe Sport, the Olympic watchdog, says, you know, he violated the code of conduct of Safe Sport. And it's just one of many examples of you know, a person in this travesty who the gymnasts want to see held accountable.
Let's bring in Lori now in Madison. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I think it's a wonderful thing that you're doing, Abby, this book and all of that. I seriously, this sexual abuse thing on women has been going on forever. And some of the oldest women in the country can say that, you know, they were slapped on the butt at their job when they worked, you know, in high office buildings. I think the best thing that we as women can do is education to the young women in school at a young age. It's not okay for someone to touch you in a improper way. Teach them at a young age. Speak out. Speak to that, you know, tell that person that's doing it. I will tell somebody. Education at a young age is, I think, the only way that this kind of thing is going to be brought out in the open, and girls will then grow up knowing.
Lori, thank you so much for the call. Abby, what can we do in order to educate?
Yeah, that's one of the really important takeaways from this book and from these brave women who shared their stories is, right, a lot of them, and a lot of this happened over nearly three decades, so a lot of it happened decades ago when people weren't as aware, and what these women are doing is raising awareness, and, you know, when parents read this book, they can see what, you know, what the red flags are, and that's why all these women told their stories, was to help people understand how this happened, to help prevent it from happening again. And there's another important thing, too, that I want to note, that an issue that the book raises, and that is that a lot of the women didn't realize they had been abused as children until Nassar was arrested. And so here they are, they're adults, they're living their lives, they're raising their families, and then to have this come smashing into their lives has just been devastating because they realized that as children they were abused by a trusted doctor, and it, you know, just raised all these issues of self-doubt. You know, a lot of them blamed themselves and looked back and questioned, and you know, you should blame the predator. The blame is on the predator. But for instance, Sarah Turisti, the very first survivor, you know, she told me she still blames herself for getting injured. She's still working through this. She had repressed those childhood memories until after the women stood up in court and she saw them and the memories came crashing back. She knew it had happened to her. And, you know, so she's wrestling, her brain's fighting with itself, trying to accept this. And she told me she's still, because it was so drilled into her head as a child, the injuries were her fault. She blames herself for falling from a balance beam, breaking her sternum. It angered the coach, and it led her to the doctor. And, you know, she said she's working with her therapist. She's trying to get beyond this, but she still blames herself for that. So these are the kind of psychological issues that this kind of abuse creates, you know, throughout your lifetime.
Abby, the way this case was prosecuted is really remarkable. Part of it involved changing the law to expand the statute of limitations in Michigan so more victims could testify and come forward. What happened there?
Yes, this was very interesting. So all these women came together, and, you know, they have medical bills, they have therapy bills. It's expensive. And they launched a civil suit against all these institutions, including Michigan State. And this is very interesting. A lawyer told me for the first time in this book how they got Michigan State to pay $500 million to the survivors. And but it might not have ever happened at all because, first of all, a lot of the women in the case were outside the statute of limitations. So this lawyer worked with state senators, including Margaret O'Brien, and worked on legislation to expand the statute of limitations to include women throughout the years. Now, the legislation didn't go as far as a lot of the women wanted, but it did, you know, it did allow them to move forward with this case. But separately, the other issue was Michigan State had legal immunity as a government institution. So the lawyer, his name is James White, started working again on legislation to strip the university of immunity. And so behind the scenes, he's working on these two bills with the senators. And, you know, meanwhile, he's keeping an eye on lawmakers on the vote to see which way it would go. And he figured out that the bill expanding the statute of limitations would pass, but the bill stripping the university of immunity would not pass. And he says Michigan State didn't know this yet, and he got, you know, he talked to his band of attorneys. There was this band of attorneys from across the country working on this settlement and told them, make the deal now. And they did. And so Michigan State paid $500 million when they most likely would have had legal immunity, and they couldn't, you know, they might have paid zero.
Abby, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you so much for raising awareness about these women in this book.
Abigail Pesta is a journalist and author. Her latest book is The Girls, An All-American Town, A Predatory Doctor, and The Untold Story of the Gymnast Who Brought Him Down. She joined us from the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.